Today is Monday, January 4th. Trump made a phone call to the Georgia Secretary of State in regards to the election results there. And it was an hour-long conversation that was recorded and eventually published online. Listen to the whole thing, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around this man and his thinking. The only thing I can come up with is that he is so utterly reliant on all of the tools and the tricks and the manipulation and the lies that he has utilized over the years to build himself into something, into a name, into a celebrity, into an idea. He's using all of these things now in an effort to try to get yet another deal. Like, that's all this is to him when he's making this call. And Georgia wasn't the only place he called. After he called Georgia, he also called a few other battleground states. I'm assuming Nevada, Arizona, Michigan, and probably Pennsylvania. And he's going to use the exact same tactics that he used there. This is a man who is, during the start of the call, at the very beginning, he begins to lay out his case by listing all of these very inflated numbers when it came to how many dead people voted and how many signatures were invalid and how many people voted out of state and how many things need to be tossed out. Like, these were very, very huge numbers and just not real and not based on any actual information. In fact, for example, they talked about the amount of people who voted who were dead. Now, they contend that 5,000 dead people voted. However, the secretary pushed back on that number and said that, you know, we had a conversation with our legislature and we only found an instance where two dead people managed to get votes in, not 5,000. Those numbers are completely wrong. When they tried to justify their claim, part of their justification was, well, we didn't have any of the information. So how did they get this information? More than likely, they heard somewhere that, we'll say, John Smith is dead and he managed to cast a vote. So then they went and looked at all of the records, the public records available of how many John Smiths there were in the state of Georgia, how many of them may have died, right? And then they use these highly inflated numbers in an effort to try to say, well, there were 5,000 dead people voting. They took a very common name, use public databases and public records to extrapolate that tip that they got and make it bigger than what it is, right? So they only know that one potential John Smith may have been dead and casted a vote. So then they decide to look up all the John Smiths to see how many of them could have casted a vote. And that becomes their magic 5,000 number. Everything is done in an effort to make his claims and himself seem bigger than what he is. Like, he's not even necessarily trying to win in the purest sense of a word. He's literally trying to destroy any sense that Joe Biden beat him. He's claiming that there are 150,000 votes that can just be thrown out, which would theoretically give him that 150,000 vote lead. All of this is done to inflate not just the numbers, but to inflate his sense of self, because that's how he has operated his entire life. This is the same guy who created an entire persona and use that fake persona to call magazines to hype up Donald Trump. Donald Trump called magazines under a pseudonym to hype himself up. He understands that it's a numbers game. He understands that you need to generate enough hype and enough interest and enough, you know, big numbers to get people to look at it. And he's not looking for everybody to be interested. He can make 100 calls talking about how great he was. He only needs one magazine, one newspaper to call him back, to be interested in the hype so that he can then use that as an opportunity to sell himself. He has to inflate these fraudulent numbers, because the more fraudulent numbers they are, the more votes that he wins by. He has to make it seem as if that rally size will correspond to how many votes he's going to get. He has to make it seem as if just because the Republicans have won some state races and some federal races and they did well in that election, that that also means that he should be doing well. Like, he's trying to conflate and inflate his sense of value and his sense of self-worth, because that's the only way in which he knows how to sell himself. During this selling process, he also engages in these highly manipulative tactics that was reminiscent to me of when we went down to Florida and we attended one of those timeshare things because we wanted free tickets to Disney World. It was a very painful experience, and I probably should have just paid the money to go to Disney World. But I learned a lot about high pressure sales and the manipulation that they do. He starts off being very cordial to them. You know, he obviously has a grievance, but he's trying to make it seem as if these individuals aren't to blame for his grievance, right? It's not your fault that, you know, these numbers are wrong. That's what he's trying to say. But as time goes on, he moves from that cordial nature into the belittling aspect of it, where he's trying to insult their sense of self, their sense of worth, and their sense and their intelligence. And throughout this whole thing, there's a process that he engages in where anytime someone's trying to give him a definitive answer, right, he decides that he's going to interrupt them. And then he begins on this cycle in which he starts to throw more questions at them, right? But before they can answer the questions, he just continues talking and talking and talking, and then he adds in more questions. But they can't answer those questions because he has to continue talking and talking and talking. And then he asks another question, and he gives them enough opportunity at this point to start to answer that question as well, but the cycle repeats itself, because once they start to answer that question, if it's definitive and it's not what he wants, he starts the cycle over and over and over again. Like, that's just his methodology. And being in that timeshare thing and listening to this talk, I remember my feelings at that time, and all it's really designed to do is wear you down until they get what they want. If they can talk long enough, I'm sure Trump felt that he could probably talk for 2 or 3 hours, because in his mind, if I can talk to you long enough and I can wear you down long enough, right, I can interrupt you, I can interrupt your thought processes, I can confuse you. Then on top of that, I'm going to give you some random compliments. But in addition to the random compliments, I'm going to insult you. All of this is done to play on this person's emotions and to just make them weary to either the point where they just want to leave, or maybe they even start to feel bad for how they treated you. Like, it's really screwed up. It's like if you've ever been in a car sale and you're with the salesman and you start to feel guilty because you feel like you're wasting their time, and maybe you should just sign the paperwork and get the car so you can get the hell out of there. Like that's the entire intent behind how this man operates. So I'm just looking at how he treated even some of his own people. So during the conversation when they were talking about the 5,000, you know, dead people who were voting, one of his own people asked, you know, well, can we take our numbers? These are the numbers that they generated from the public records, and compare them with your records. And before she can get a definitive answer from the state, Trump basically said, no, you know, we don't need to share any of this information. We don't need that information. And I'm just like, well, why? Is he trying to discourage his own people from getting accurate records so that they can, you know, decide whether or not this 5,000 dead people voting is real or not? And, you know, that's not the purpose. The purpose is to keep the number high because he needs to overinflate his value. So he doesn't want any type of accuracy. If he has any type of definitive answer, it stops his negotiation power, right? Same thing. The Georgia Bureau of Investigations, along with the Federal Bureau of Investigations, you know, interviewed a bunch of people about some potential fraud down in Florida. And as they're talking about it, one of his people asks, you know, well, what did they find? Again, Trump interrupts this conversation and says that it doesn't matter what they found. He begins to belittle the FBI, saying, you know, that they're not very good at their job or whatever. But again, the purpose isn't to have any type of definitive answer. He has to keep this negotiation going on as long as possible. He doesn't need definitive answers. He has to keep the inflation high. He has to keep the negotiations going. So he has to stop these cycles and, you know, just keep pushing the same narrative over and over again. And someone in this position, you would think, would know all the ins and outs about their own case. But on a few occasions, you had instances where Trump had no idea what was happening, right? And he was giving them evidence.
You send this into Cobb County, which we didn't want to go into. And you said it would be open to the public and we could have our... So we had our experts there. They weren't allowed into the room. But we didn't want Cobb County. We wanted Fulton County, and you wouldn't give it to us. Now, why aren't we doing signature, and why can't it be open to the public, and why can't we have professionals do it instead of rank amateurs that will never find anything and don't want to find anything? They don't want to find... You know they don't want to find anything. Someday you'll tell me the reason why. Because I don't understand your reasoning, but someday you'll tell me the reason why. But why don't you want to find?
We chose Cobb County.
Why don't
we
you want to find?
Cobb County.
What?
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, why did you do Cobb County? We didn't even request. We requested Fulton County, not Cobb County.
Well, Mr. President, we
chose
have
Cobb
our
County.
Go ahead.
We chose Cobb County because that was the only county where there's been any evidence submitted. The signature verification was not properly done.
Well, no, but I told you, but we're not saying that.
We're the aggrieved party.
Fulton County, look, Stacey, in my opinion, Stacey is as dishonest as they come. She has outplayed you at every heart, at everything. She got you to sign a totally unconstitutional agreement, which is a disastrous agreement. You can't check signatures. You can't do I can't imagine you're allowed to do harvesting, I guess, in that agreement. That agreement is a disaster for this country. But she got you somehow to sign that thing. And she's outsmarted you at every step. And I hate to imagine what's going to happen on Monday or Tuesday, but it's very scary to people, you know, where the ballots flow in. Out of nowhere, it's very scary to people. That consent decree is a disaster. It's a disaster. A very good lawyer who examined it said they've never seen anything like it. And
harvesting is still illegal in the state of Georgia, and that settlement agreement did not change that.
Not a settlement agreement. It's a consent decree. It even says consent decree on it, doesn't it? It uses the term consent decree. It doesn't say settlement agreement. It's a consent decree. It's a disaster.
It's a settlement agreement.
In that clip, you can hear him talking about the validation that went on in Cobb County versus Fulton County, and, you know, it's not what you wanted. And then somebody says, yes, that is what we asked for. Then you hear him talking about the consent decree. You know, you guys signed a consent decree and they're like, no, we didn't. You know, it was a settlement agreement. And for those of you who don't know, a consent decree and a settlement agreement are both very similar things. The difference between the two is that a settlement agreement is signed outside of the court system. It's something that the two parties agree to on their own, while a consent decree is something that is often mandated and enforced by the courts themselves. So a settlement agreement that is enforced by the courts. He didn't even know his own terminology. And that might be indicative of an individual who, you know, I think a lot of people take swipes at his intelligence because he doesn't know a lot of things. But for him, a lot of this information is moot. He's not interested in details. He's not interested in how good his Trump stakes are. He's not interested in how well educated you are via Trump University, how much value you can get out of it. He's not interested in, you know, his own foundation and how many people he's helping. He's not interested in all of the details. All he knows is he has this product that he has to sell, and he's going to sell it the way in which he sold everything else. He's going to hype himself up. He's going to inflate his numbers to make him seem bigger than what he is. Right. He's going to negotiate with people in a way that wears them down and wears on their emotions and their mental health in order to convince them that they need to you know, join on with him and, you know, get with the program. You know, if you want to be a success and you want to be like me, join Trump University because you're pathetic right now, right? Like, that's his, that's always been how he's operated. That's why, you know, he can argue about people from outside of Georgia coming in to vote and, you know, those votes being fraudulent, but also give you an argument saying that, well, there are people from Alabama and South Carolina who are saying that I won Georgia because the details do not matter. He needs to sell you. He doesn't know things about his own case because he doesn't need to know. He's inconsistent because he doesn't need to be consistent. He just needs to sell you on something. He needs to wear you down. He needs to inflate his value. And then he needs to sprinkle it with a veneer of validity, right? That's why he can sit there and argue that his rally numbers were so big, because it gives him a veneer of validity. That's why he can sit there and tell you, man, we have certified accountants, you know, that have validated all of his inflated numbers, because he needs to give the veneer of something valid, of something credible. But you can't take anything that he says for like any type of truth. I can't listen to a man talk to me about certified accountants when I know this is the same dude who claims that he's a billionaire, but we know that he's $400 million in debt. I can't trust your certified accountants. And a lot of people think that he's doing a lot of this because he needs to maintain his audience and his support and his base of support. But I think this, like, what he does is just who he is in that moment, and he can't turn it off because it's worked for him in the past. It's gotten him this far. Why wouldn't he fall back on the same stuff over and over and over again? Particularly when the stakes are so high. January 20th, he's out. January 20th, the lawsuits are going to come in. Hell, we might get one from Dominion after all, after this phone call leaked. But the phone call didn't really leak. And I was wondering, like, why would Raffensperger even think about putting this stuff out or allowing this to get out? And I had to go back in time, and I'm like, man, I remember when Lindsey Graham called down to Georgia to talk to them, and they were like, oh, he made it seem like he wanted us to, you know, get rid of some votes. And Lindsey's like, I never said that. So Raffensperger's like, okay, I'm going to record this call just in case you try to get slick and say you didn't say something you didn't say. But not only that, this call and the nature of this call is very similar to what Lindsey Graham's call was, in that this call can be interpreted as election interference. And this is a call coming from the president of the United States. This is a call from a man who's going to be out of office in a little over 2 weeks. And Raffensperger did not want to get caught up in any nonsense with him. Raffensperger could not afford to have, you know, hints and whispers of this conversation leaking to the press, like the Lindsey Graham phone conversation leaked to the press. He couldn't have people forming their own thoughts and ideas about what was said and who said what and why he didn't do X, Y, Z. So he put it out there, you know, on its own. And reading a story today, you figure out that, oh, he's also suggesting that the Fulton district attorney should probably take a look into this. Raffensperger is not going down with Trump's ship. He hasn't left the ship yet. He's gotten into the lifeboat and he's rowing by it. So he's still next to the ship, but he's in the lifeboat and he's just trying to make sure when the ship sinks that he doesn't sink with it. And for those of you who are wondering, well, they just want to verify their information, right? They need access to the state's information. Why won't the state just let them have access? And there is a single reason why I can understand they don't want to give anybody connected to Donald Trump access to any type of private information, and it's simply because they cannot be trusted. During this conversation, a woman named Ruby Freeman was mentioned so many times. Well, in real life, this is a 60-year-old woman who sells purses at like flea markets and stuff. At this time, during the election, she took a job, because a lot of people her age take these election volunteer jobs. She took a job, and at that time, she was just supposed to count ballots. That's all she did. She's a regular person who sells, you know, products, you know, to keep herself afloat. And she took a part-time job, a temporary part-time job during the election. And now she has become the villain for them. She is the person who magically, you know, stuffed in, I think they said 18,000 ballots of some sort, you know. And as a result of this, she's been doxxed. And, you know, her address has been leaked. She's been getting threatening messages all over her social media. So there is no way in hell the Trump campaign is going to get access to any of that information.
Mr. President, this is Mark. Let me just, it sounds like we've got two different sides agreeing that we can look at those areas, and I assume that we can do that within the next 24 to 48 hours to go ahead and get that reconciled so that we can look at the two claims and making sure that we get the access to the Secretary of State's data to either validate or invalidate the claims that have been made. Is that correct?
So that's not what I said. I'm happy to, you know, sit down with or have our lawyer sit down with Curtin and the lawyers on that side and explain to him, hey, here's based on what we've looked at so far, here's how we know this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong.
And we what you're saying, Ryan, hold on, let me make sure. So what you're saying is you really don't want to give access to the data. You just want to make another case on why the lawsuit is wrong.
I don't think we can give access to data that's protected by law.
And that's it.